I'm John Scott, and I'm an alcoholic. Sober since December 19th, 1982, and for that I'm awful grateful. I want to thank the committee for asking me to come and share with you again after 10 years. Vince and I was talking about just a second ago, it was 10 years ago that we were at the first one. And both of our wives were here then, if I remember right, but they quit us already, so, you know. Tell yours. Yours is sincere. Yeah, mine's faking it. Mine's got a button that you push, and she coughs, you know. So, anyway, I digressed already, didn't I? It's an honor and a privilege to speak anywhere in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I really appreciate being asked back. It's a lot of people here that I know and love. This bunch here has been a group that has changed the face of Alcoholics Anonymous in Montana. It really has, and I appreciate what you guys are doing. I really do. I happen to be a member of one that I think does the same thing. Causes hate and discontent, and mostly growth as we go through life. And Vince belongs to one just like that, too, I believe. And I've heard a few derogatory remarks, and I love them all. It's an amazing deal that we get to do this. You think about this for just a minute. It's St. Patty's Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Normally, by this time on St. Patty's Day, I was relatively safe because I'd be in a corner completely passed out. So the night I get to be basically sober and somewhat sane, and I get to share my experience, strength, and hope with the folks in this room. And hopefully, if you're new here tonight and you're feeling like you're being cheated out of St. Patty's, that's too bad. I got really, really, really good news for you. If you're new and you're thinking your life is over, you ain't started yet. You haven't started yet. If you're a guy like me, I'll back up a little bit before I get right into my recovery. I always like them people that talk about, well, I don't want to talk about my drunkalogue tonight. I just want to talk about recovery, and then they talk for an hour and a half about the drunkalogue. But I did drink, and I drank more than I should. And I think one of the things that I really want to always remember is the way I felt the last day I drank. And the last day I drank, I woke up and I know there's a lot of people in this room that have heard my story over and over and over again. And it's just, that's all I got. That's all I got is what happened to me. I was going to tell somebody else's story, but Spencer's here. Maybe I can tell his. He's got a flashy one. I heard that last, or night before last. But all I have is, this is what happened to me. And what happened to me is on December 18th, the day before I got sober, I woke up in the basement of a friend's house. And you know how we wake up just, you know, kind of hated that. You know, it's just like you're sucking air right off the bat. And you're trying. And the thing is, your mind just kicks into high gears right off the bat. And you're trying to figure out what it is that you've been doing, you know, because I had this period of time. And the last time I remember going for bed on Thanksgiving Day, and it's December 18th. Something, you know, there's like a gap there. I remember pieces and parts of that gap, but not much. I hate having to get up that next day and going to people and asking them about what it was that you did in such a way that they don't know that you don't know what you did, you know, and you kind of just got to slide that in there. And I hated that part. And I hated the way that I felt. It's because I didn't want to do what I was doing. It's like something would happen to me. I'd get to drinking, and it's like it would take a life of its own. And the next, you know, I was only going to go there for a couple. That's all we ever do. And it's like the next thing you know, that guy buys me a drink, and then you can't owe nobody, so you got to pay him back. And the next thing, you know, 4, 5, 15, 20 minutes, an hour, 2, 3 hours, it's 8 o'clock, huh? You know, I have to leave at 8:30. That's it. I have to leave at 8:30. 8:30. I'm gonna leave. I'm gonna an hour from now. I'll leave at 10:30. You know, and you just, you know, it's just like just little by little you just disintegrate, and the next thing you know, it's you know, it's 10, 11:30, 12:30. I was supposed to call her. I called her once. You know, hello, Cindy. I'm in red lights. I mean, why should I be in red lights? Just once. Jeez, you know, why would you do that again? We didn't always fight. When I first met her, I thought she was hot. She was hot. You know, at least I thought she was hot. And I was playing in a rock and roll band at the time. Now I'm a dirt farmer. But I played in a rock and roll band, and I was world famous. I played all over the world in various other places, mostly Billings. It's like people talk about in AA, you know, I was truly a legend in my own mind. I mean, I was, too. I can remember in the mid-60s walking down the main street of Billings, Montana, you know, I always felt so lonely and so, you know, just separated from other people and stuff. You know, of course, it was in the mid-60s, Montana, long hair about down to here, bell bottoms, beetle boots, Nehru jacket. And the finishing touch, if it was warm, I used to wear a cape. I wasn't too tightly wrapped in those days. And if it was cold, I'd wear a World War I trench coat. And I couldn't fit, you know, people would drive by me, you know, it was lonely at the top. But I met her, and my life was changing, and I knew I had to straighten up. And so I decided to go back to work for my dad, which I just hated to do because, I mean, this ranch, I was raised a cowboy. I was raised on a ranch. I was raised in a rural community. And it's like somewhere along the line I found booze. And at that point, I decided that was holding me back. You know, I mean, I realized almost immediately that my future had a lot to do with me getting away from that place. And I did everything I could for about 4 or 5 years. It's like a guy told me one time, he says, I went out to set the world on fire. And he says, in 4.5 years, I had to come home for more matches. And that was me. I had, after 4.5 years, I had to come home and get some more matches because the world was every day was raining at that time. And I remember coming home, and I decided that I was going to get myself I was going to start doing the deal. I mean, I didn't really want to do the deal. I didn't really want to be a rancher or farmer, I was going to get married. Obviously, I wasn't making any money playing in the band business. And it's so funny. Today, we meet in the place I used to steal booze out of. It used to be a grocery store. And now, when we go in there, every once in a while, it dawns on me how things have changed over the years. You know, I used to slip in there, and I'd steal booze and walk out with, you know, cans of beer. I had an apartment 2 blocks away. Cost $25. This is how good my music business was. It cost $25 a month. It had a kitchen and a sink and a bed in about the area of two of these. And it had a sink, and underneath the sink there wasn't a drain. It was just a bucket. And the bathroom was outside, and I mean outside. I mean, you had to go outside. And there's, of course, you know how I am. I'm warped anyway. My perception of reality is not true to begin with. But I can remember going in that bathroom. It was kind of a community bathroom. There's all these old ladies that keep coming in there all the time. It was disgusting. I always had to pour that bucket in that toilet, and that's how you got rid of your wastewater and stuff. I don't know where that's going either, but anyway, that was my rocket to stardom, and I found I finally decided that it's better at home, you know. So I went home and I started working on the ranch, and shortly after that, Cindy and I got married, and geez, we were in love. I mean, we were in love, and it went really good for a long time. We had a great time, we really did. And next thing you know, I just started drinking more and more, it was kind of a slippery deal, because on the outside it looked like things was going all right, but on the inside, just little by little, everything I stood for or believed in was getting chipped away. You know, all my integrity was being stripped away, the ability to to know truth. I mean, all these things that were important to me were slowly getting stripped away. Because I wanted to be a good man and a good, and I wanted to be able to be some kind of service to people. And it wasn't that I was wanting to do what I was doing, but it's like little by little, my mind started taking me over. And when you get in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and it talks about our problem is centered in our mind, I really can relate to that. Because little by little, my thinking is what got worse and worse. My drinking did too, but my thinking got worse as we continued in this journey. And within about 10, 12 years, this gal that I loved dearly and this job that I hated dearly and all this crap that was going on in my life, I mean, it was like I just got to where I couldn't stand it anymore. And I got crazy. I got suicidal. And, my life was upside down. My wife was leaving me on a daily basis. My kids were crazy as a loon, and my folks was talking about firing me because I wasn't working. It's like my life just absolutely just was turning upside down, and I'm not very fast. I mean, alcoholics always talk about the Kenyan intellectual alcoholic mind. There's about 5 Al-Anons right now. They will never talk about that over on their side. I've never been in an Al-Anon meeting where I heard about the Kenyan alcoholic intellectual mind. It just happens in here occasionally. And it's like you get to thinking that you know. And I began to realize that obviously the reason I'm trying to commit suicide or thinking about committing suicide is her fault. And because it's her fault, it would almost be a shame for me to kill myself and not her. It's the trouble is the way that thing kind of come about is all of a sudden it's like I always thought it was because I was a Gemini. I kind of had two minds, But you guys know. It's like you kind of talk to yourself, right? You're going along and you're. You're going, you need to kill yourself. Yeah, but it's her fault. That's right, it's her fault. Well, let's get after it. It's like little by little, I got to where I was dwelling on it all the time. And within 6 or 8 months, it began to be obvious that's what had happened. And then I got to thinking about the kids, the poor kids, those 2 kids that I got. Those guys knowing that their dad killed their mom, and it became pretty obvious to me that had to, I had to take the kids too. It happened in Billings not too many years ago. Remember, there's a doctor in Billings, and the night that we talked about that happening, I understood. I know what that was about, or at least I thought I did. Because it's just that insanity, and it's like, how can my mind get that crazy, and for me not to really realize that I am in deep doo-doo. I mean, I'm in bad shape. And people would tell me from time to time that I needed to quit drinking. It's like, you got to be out of your mind. Because drinking is the only thing that made me feel comfortable. When I was in high school, I was walking down the sidewalk one day, and it's no big deal, but 2 kids behind me said, God, look at him, he walks funny. And forever, I couldn't walk right. Going to dancing was out of the question. I go to the dancing, and I couldn't even walk across the floor and ask a girl. And that's what always had happened to me. We lived in I lived in Miles City for a while. That's about as backwards as you want to get at that time. And we had these dances where the gals would be on one side and the guys would be, and you'd hobble across and you'd say, would you want to dance with me? And they'd say, no. It's just tear you apart. I'm sensitive, and I can remember the first time I drank, the very first night I drank, we went out and I think we bought a case, maybe a case and a half of beer, and there's 4 of us, and we drank it, and it's like, we got to that dance, and I could dance, I could walk, I could talk, and it's like everything I ever wanted to do, it's like alcohol was doing it for me, and people would tell me that I needed to quit that. And I go, but you don't understand. The only relief that I ever got from this insanity that I was having is whenever I was drinking, it seemed like, And so drinking is what I started to do to overcome the problems that my drinking was causing me. I just kept drinking. And the more you do that after a while, it causes, if you're like me, it causes a lot of grief in your life. I didn't know what to do. I was crazy. And This guy named Frank, and some of you folks know Frank, he showed up at my house one. He was a feed salesman. I was running a feedlot at the time. He was a feed salesman. He showed up one day, and Frank and I was old drinking buddies. We drank forever together. And I was so glad to see him. Here's the drink, Frank. You know, and I fixed my drink, and Frank pushed it back and says, "I'm not drinking today." I said, "Well, Frank, what the heck's the deal here? You always drink." And Frank and I got in these arguments. I remember one time he called me opinionated, and we argued about it all night long. And finally, about 3 o'clock in the morning, I finally proved him wrong. I wasn't opinionated, and we ended up. After you've been here for a while, you'll catch that one. We ended up, drinking a lot together. We got in all kinds of trouble together. And Frank's sitting there at just my kitchen table, and he's not drinking. I can't get him to drink. And I ask him, "Well, what's the deal?" And finally, after a while, he finally told me he's going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, "My God, Frank. Alcoholics Anonymous, isn't that a little overcorrecting, hey, you drink just like I do." And he says, "Yeah, I know." And I says, "Well, my life ain't going too good. I was just, you can't talk to people about what's going on inside. I couldn't. How do you tell somebody, "Well, I've been thinking about killing my wife and kids." "How are things going?" "Oh, pretty good. Been thinking about a little homicide, a little suicide, But outside of that, things going pretty good. You just don't talk about it. You can't. I'd gone to the doctors and the shrinks and those people. You don't tell them about that, I'll guarantee you. I ain't stupid, And I'm going. "Well, Frank, my life is not going too good, really. How about taking me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? I don't think I'm an I think I'm crazy, is what I think, but I don't talk about that much. And maybe I've got a drinking problem. Really didn't think I did. I thought maybe my problem was I was, how'd she do that?" I said, "Well, how about taking me to a meeting?" And he says, "Oh, no." He says, no. Alcoholics Anonymous. I told him, "Well, why not, Frank?" He says, "Well, it's really simple. Alcoholics Anonymous is for people who want to quit drinking, and you're drinking, obviously." He says, "You're still drinking." He says, I won't take you." And what I leave out is he told me, "As soon as you want to quit drinking, I'd be glad to take you." But I can remember that next morning, waking up and going, "Oh, my God, this drinking is getting out of hand. You realize what I almost did last night? I almost broke down and went to Alcoholics Anonymous. Going to have to slow down a little bit here. This is getting out of hand." And for the next six months, I just simply died one day at a time. There was nothing flashy about it. I didn't do anything really stupid or dumb. It's just like every day was a little worse than yesterday. That's all. Every day just get a little darker, just a little. There's a lot of goofy things that Cindy and I did during. I moved her out of the house 20,000 times and moved her back 21. And it's just like we've just insane. It's crazy. Life is just absolutely just. It was a circus and just. Could not even catch your breath for a second. It's like you've got these problems and you can't even begin to get your arms around them. It's important for me to remember the last day that I drank. I woke up in a guy's house. His name was Johnny. I got upstairs and I got to ask him about where I've been for the last month. He didn't know. He'd been with me, he thought. I look outside, my pickup's gone. I don't know if anybody else is in here really good about losing machinery whenever I was drinking, but my pickup was gone. We had to go find my pickup. And on the way to find my pickup, I told Johnny, I can't do this anymore. I've got to do something. The only guy I knew who was in AA was Frank. And I says, let's go see Frank. And Johnny says, yeah. He says, I'm with you. Because he'd been with me most of that time. And he says, yeah, let's go. And we went and saw Frank that morning. And Frank was, he was so glad to see us, and come out. And he got us in, we were sitting in the car and we were talking. Of course, Johnny and I was, we was nervous. You know, I was really nervous when I and I'd already gone to the grocery store and we had a case of beer or something like that. And we was already drinking it because that's the only thing that calmed me down. And he pulls out these 20 questions. You know, the AA 20, you guys have seen the AA 20 questions. Nobody can pass, you know. And he says, take the test. Well, I think it says, like, if you get two wrong, you might be, but three, you're just done for. You know, 19 out of 20, I was in trouble. I knew that, you know. But I thought, you know, I had, you know, this is the thing about me. I have this secret weapon, this gray matter between my ears, this knowing. I know things that aren't true. I just love to believe it. And I began to know, I just know things. It comes out of nowhere. It's like without thought process. It just boom, you know. And I knew it. I knew the deal. Here's the deal, you know. Alcoholics Anonymous. The name alone is going to keep people out, you know. And you guys have come up with a test that nobody can pass. There's no way. Now some of these Al-Anons that send you sponsors that come over to the house every once in a while. Just for the fun of it, I've gave them the test. They can't even do the test right. They can't drink right, and they can't do the test right because they'll get, you know, 20 out of 20, you know, no problem. Don't drink right, can't do the test right. But I can remember taking that test, and geez, Johnny, this is Johnny didn't do very well either. And we asked Frank if he'd take us to a meeting that night. I'd ask him just previously to that question, how many meetings a week does Alcoholics Anonymous have? And he says, we meet every night. I said, well, Johnny, would you take me and John to a, or Frank, would you take me and John to a meeting tonight? He says, no. I said, well, why not? He says, because Alcoholics Anonymous is for people who want to quit drinking, and you're still drinking, obviously. He says, but I'll tell you what you do. You and Johnny go ahead and drink all day long, or drink all you want to. But tomorrow morning, when you get up, don't drink anymore. And come see me, and I'll take you to a meeting tomorrow if you don't drink. But he said, if you're drinking, I'm not going to take you. And that sounded like a good deal to me for some reason. So I got, you know, me and Johnny liked it too. It was good. So we drove down to the Keg Bar, which was one of the lower class places at that time. It's not even there. It was still there, but it's a different name now. But anyway, I always want to remember how really good it was that last day I drank. I can remember sitting over in the corner crying. Because I was such a loser and such a failure and just a zero, and I love my family, and yet if you used to look at me and see my actions, you knew that I didn't love them, and I wanted to be a good husband, and I wanted to be a good employer, I wanted to be a good friend, and all this, every aspect of my life was a failure, every single part. I was just a loser, and I'd be crying over there because I was so lonely. And somebody would come over and try to talk to me, and I want to fight them, you know. And I'm not a fighter, but I'd want to fight them, you know. And the next thing you know, they'd leave, and then I'd be crying because I was lonely and a loser. And that's how it went all day long. There was a couple of things that I usually leave out of the story, but tonight I don't know why I'm going to throw them in here. But I don't know if this ever happened to you guys, but every once in a while, when you get to drinking a lot, something happens to your motor actions. And I had an accident. And I always, you know, but you, the first accident's all right. You know what to do with the first accident. But the second accident was really bad. You know, I'm not going to go into that much more. But if you're new, you know what I'm talking about. If you're old, you know what I'm talking about. So. They said we're supposed to identify. Well, there it is, I guess. So I end up the next morning, for some reason, I don't drink. And I end up going to that meeting that first night, Frank had called me up earlier and says, you know, come early. I want you to meet this guy named Richard. And I said, okay. So we went to this restaurant across the street from the place that we had the meeting in. And them guys ate. They had these little steaks they ordered, and I didn't eat very well whenever I'd been on one of those runners like that. And they were laughing and joking, and they ate their steaks, and they ate my steak. And Richard was really a guy. He had a three-piece suit on all the time, wore these wingtip shoes, and he just had a bad back, and he just smoked like this, just constantly, just one cigarette after another. But at the time, I did too, you know, because I was nervous. And he would sit there and ask me these really tough questions. He says, John, he says, do you believe that you are responsible for your own actions? And I mean, well, you know, this is the elite group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been trying to get into it for over 6 months. I want the answer to be right. And I can remember going, yeah, I do. Because I thought that's what they wanted to hear. You know, it wasn't really that I believed it. And he says, good, now maybe you'll start acting like it. And I can remember that was just a powerful, because I knew what the deal was. See, I had the secret weapon. The deal was that Cindy had been talking to Frank, and Frank had been talking to Richard, and Richard came up with that question because of Cindy, you know. And it was a trap, you know. But then what he started to do for me, and this is the gift that I think that a lot of times we overlook here in Alcoholics Anonymous, it happened, is he started talking to me about what had happened to him. And he was telling me things that nobody knew. Nobody knew. And all of a sudden, I began to know that he knew about my drinking. And things changed because I began to realize that this wasn't so much a con job. At least I knew that this guy, this Frank and Richard, because I knew Frank. There wasn't no doubt about Frank being who he was. But Richard was a drunk just like I was a drunk. And we walked across that street to that meeting that night, and you know, I don't know what was said. I don't know who was there really. I remember a few of the people that was there, but what I remember is more of a feeling than an event. And that feeling was, for the first time in a long, long time, I got a little gift, and the gift was hope. And I don't know exactly how it came about. It might have been the laughter. It might have been, you know, just the stories. It might have been the handshakes. I don't know what it was. And I couldn't describe it. I have no idea, but I think it was the spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I somehow thought, you know, I think I better come back to this thing, even though I'm not really an alcoholic, you know. But maybe these guys can help me with some of these crazy things I got going on. Because some of them was nuts, and you could tell, you know. And and even if you was newer. And one of them guys was a guy named Johnny. And right after the meeting, Johnny came up to me, and he says, you don't have a sponsor, and I'll be your sponsor now. And I said, okay. See, part of my thinking was that, you know, with a name like Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys are probably hurting for money, and at some point, you're going to ask me for $100 a month. And I figured that this $100 a month would probably support the sponsorship, you know. And so anyway, I told him that I don't remember what I told him. Next thing I knew, I was being sponsored by a guy named Johnny. And he took me to his house, and he says, come on to my house. He says, I want you to sit down and talk to me a little bit about Alcoholics Anonymous. And he talked to me about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. He got the big book out, and we talked a little bit about that. And it was 2 o'clock, and he says, okay, now it's time for you to go home, you know, because the bar is closed. And I went home that night, and the next morning I woke up, and I went back into – he was an auctioneer. I went back in there, and those two guys from AA showed up after a couple hours, and they got hold of me and took me to lunch. And after that, 2 more guys from AA showed up, and they got hold of me. And the next thing you know, it's time for supper, and we went to supper, and then we had a meeting. And then after the meeting, Johnny picked me up, took me to his house until 2 o'clock, says, it's time for you to go home now. And that happened just identical for the next 2 or 3 days. And I was really nervous, and they fixed me up this concoction of orange juice and caterer's syrup and honey and vitamins and put it in a blender, turned it on, said, here, drink this. It'll make you feel better. And I don't think it made me feel better, but what happened is I got to acting as if almost immediately. And I, no, I'm doing fine, I'm doing fine. And within, you know, within a short period of time, I was really starting to feel a little better, you know. And I got to thinking, my God, what's wrong with me? I made a bigger deal out of this than what, you know, I mean, this is so simple. All you get to do is put the plug in the jug, you know, just quit. You know, it's such a simple deal. I always make big deals. You know, I'm always one of these guys that make something really big that's not, you know. And then sobriety hit. And if you've been here more than about 15, 20 minutes, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's like all of a sudden, I begin to know things. My secret weapon really kicked into high gear. And it began to dawn on me that I had found, I had gotten into a group of twisted people. And I really began to see how insincere they really were. And how they just had quirks, and they were, some of them just laugh and talk, and you know it's phony, and they'd act like they liked each other, and of course you'd know they didn't. There was guys in that group 15, 20, 25 years, and they said they'd never had a drink in 15 or 20 years, and it's like, why? You know, why would you do that? And I just had this ability to see through all the phoniness in Alcoholics Anonymous. And there was people in AA that demonstrated it on a regular basis. This is a little gal named Millie, and Millie is just a sweetheart, you know. And I talk about these people, and I want you to know I love them dearly. But when I was new, they were weird. And this little Millie, she'd sit in the same chair all the time and say, look at all the miracles. Just look at all the miracles. And I'm, you know, I don't see no miracles. And they'd call on her, and she just usually passed. She never had much to say. And they had another gal named Margaret. They call her Margaret. Margaret, hi, my name is Margaret. And I'm an alcoholic. And them that stay sober, stay sober. Them that stay sober, go to meetings. And them that don't. Thank you. And you can call Margaret 2 years from now. She, hi, my name is Margaret. I'm an alcoholic. And them that stay sober, or them that go to meetings, stay sober. And them that don't. Thank you. It's like, God, what a lame, you know, come on. I mean, after a while, you'd think she'd have something, you know. And had another guy, his name was Nick, and Nick was a treatment center guy who was in Colorado and moved up to Billings. And Nick's deal was, I mean, his quirk was that he'd say, you know, if you've been here for 6 months or a year, there's really no need for me to remember your name because you're a newcomer and you're probably just a visitor. You know, this, what happened to love and tolerance? You know, and there's another guy, his name is Rotten Ralph, and Rotten Ralph was, you know, say if a new guy was having troubles with, you know, say he's having troubles with his wife, and, you know, as a meeting and gets called on, and the sponsor told him not to talk because he was new, but he talked anyway because he knew he needed to talk, get it out, you know. And so after that, they'd call him on Rotten Ralph, and Rotten Ralph would just cut this new guy to pieces, you know, and he'd be looking right at me. I don't know why. And he'd say, and he'd always put his dollar for his collection plate up in his pocket here. And after he'd get through just tearing you apart, he'd go, now if I have pissed you off, let me be the first to buy you a drink. And, you know, what do you do with that? I mean, you know that that's not right. You know, it's love and tolerance. You know, you could see through the phoniness in Alcoholics Anonymous constantly. You know, guy, there's another guy, his name is Gerald. Gerald was a guy who came from Arkansas, I believe, and I think he was running from Arkansas. He ended up in Warm Springs, you know, for a while. And he ended up getting out of Warm Springs and coming back to this home group for a little while. And, you know, he wasn't hitting on all cylinders to begin with. He was always bad. You know, if they called on him to talk, it could be 5 minutes after the hour started, and you knew who was going to be talking at the end of the hour. He'd take the whole hour. If you called him the last 15 or 20 minutes, he'd talk, you know, 4 or 5 minutes past time. And I was like Spencer then. You know, it's time. It's time. You know, we need to quit. And Gerald would ask me how I was doing. And I'd say, you know, I ain't doing good, Gerald. I hate her. I hate them stinking kids of mine. You know, I hate my job. I hate this group of people. That, you know, it's just like, you know, and I was just being honest. And he says, that's enough. That's enough. I don't hear that no more. He says, from now on, he says, when I ask you how you're doing, John, he says, you're going to tell me, Gerald, I'm getting better in every way, every day. Thank you very much. Yeah, exactly. You know, you know, I could see the phoniness. You know, it's obvious. And I was there one night. I was having tremendous amount of trouble with my wife. She's just driving me crazy. I mean, it's just insane. My first sponsor, he'd gone out and gotten drunk already, and he'd been sober for 7 years, and about 45 days after I got sober, he went out, he got mad at his group and got drunk, and I thought, here's my opportunity. I remember walking across the room that night. There's this little blonde I've been looking at for a long time, and I, you know, she had what I wanted, and I was going to go ask her, and this Richard out of nowhere, he gets in front of me. He says, I understand your sponsor's gone. I says, yeah, that's what I hear. And he says, I'm going to be your sponsor now. And I said, well, Richard, I'm not really sure if I want you to be my sponsor. He said, oh, I didn't ask. He says, I didn't ask you whether or not I wanted you to be my sponsor. He says, I'm going to be your sponsor. He always knew what I needed. About 2 weeks after that, he sold me a used diesel car. He was a used car salesman. And those diesels, they aren't like the diesels today. You know, I mean, the diesels today are pretty nice. You floorboard these, and about 15 or 20 minutes, you might be up to 15 or 20 miles an hour. And that's another thing that really made things wonderful at home. I can remember going crazy. And Richard's sponsoring me now, and he's asking me how things are going at home, and he knows. He's been talking to Frank. Frank's been talking to Cindy, and it's just like, my guys. And he says, how's that going? I said, well, I'm getting divorced. He says, no, let me get this straight. You're the ones getting a divorce? And I says, yeah, I'm getting a divorce. He says, well, you'll quit that right now. I said, but you don't understand. She's crazier than a loon. He says, hell yeah. She's got to be plumb out of her mind. Anybody that's stayed with you for 13 years has got to be plumb out of her tree. He says, but I'm going to tell you something. He says, I don't know how else to put this, but he says, they're sicker than we are, these Alilons. Now, don't be careful over there. But he says, they've gone through this period of time, or she's gone through this period of time with you, and you've been able to get a drink every once in a while and get a little relief. She's done it cold sober. He says, now don't tell her that, but that's what's happened. He says, so, you got to really be careful. Got in that diesel car, drove home just as fast as I could. Guess what Richard said about you? those early days were just absolutely insane. I remember one day the meeting was over with. I was tired of this Nick not remembering my name. Of course, me of all people to worry about something like that. And I walked up to him, and I gave him my best newcomer look, and my humility look, and all. And could I have a few minutes of your time, please? And he says, sure. I'd like to talk to you about how things are going. And then I started explaining to him about how I was hating my wife and all the things that she's doing wrong. And it was after the meeting, there's about 8 or 9 people standing up, milling around after the, and he stands up and yells at me. He says, so you're an alcoholic. Now what the hell are you going to do about it? And I looked around, there's people, everybody's looking at, I can't stand that kind of stuff anyway. And I'm done. I've had as much fun in AA as I can stand. And I can remember trying to get out that door, and he's a crippled old man. And he somehow beats me to the door, and he pushes me up against the refrigerator and says, listen, he says, you wasted my time, and you're wasting your time, and you're damn sure wasting their time. He says, why don't you just get drunk? That's what you're trying to do. And he says, you got to realize that that's what you're trying to do, is you're trying to get drunk. And right out of nowhere, it's rotten Ralph over his shoulder. Yeah, let me buy your first drink. Let me buy your first drink. It ain't like it says it is in the book. I remember stumbling out of that room, and I got in my diesel car, and I put the key in the ignition. I'm going to spin gravel all over this parking lot. And I'm just crazy. The only thing that saved me is I had a 45-minute drive home, and I'm beating on the dash, and I'm honking the horn, and just crazy. And it's just like out of nowhere. It's like something just slapped me. It's like, so you're an alcoholic. So you're an alcoholic. Now, what are you going to do about it? And I don't know whether it's a spiritual awakening or whether it's the first coherent thought I'd had in years, but it's like all of a sudden, it's like, I need to answer this question. What am I going to do about this problem that I have? This disease, this problem, this thing that you guys are calling a disease. What am I going to do about this? And the next day, I can remember just being a little better, but it wasn't wonderful. It's just a little better, And I can remember getting in my car that night because I had no place to go other than to go back to that goofy group. And I can remember getting in that car going, God, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this because I can't hardly stand showing up in a place after I'd kind of made a scene. And I can remember getting in that car going, yeah, I got to go back. First person I'll see, sure as I'm standing here, be Gerald. How you doing, John? Well, Gerald, I'm getting better in every way, every day. Thank you very much. Lying right off the bat. Got to tell Nick my name because he won't remember it. Give Ralph back his damn dollar. I just hated it at first. It just seemed so humiliating for me, But little by little, it started to change, And one of the, Cindy and I were just, we were just in a death pack. And neither one of us would say uncle. You know, it's like if one of us left, the other one won type of a deal, you know. You couldn't turn loose. And it's like, I can remember, you know, Richard saying, you know, how are things going? I says, well, it's not going good. It's just hater. And he says, I'll tell you what, from now on, he says, I want you to do, you know, she's here, we're going to practice with her. He says, I want you to tell her every day when you see her, I want you to tell her you love her. I don't love her. You know, here, just lying to me, then making me lie again. And he says, no, he says, you start telling her that you love her. But he says, in your case, you and I and her, we all three know you're a liar. So he says, from now on, what you got to do is you got to show you love her somehow. And, you know, all of a sudden, he says, no, that's not what I'm talking about. He says, what I'm talking about is, he says, you're going to have to start picking up your clothes. You're going to have to start, you know, cleaning up after yourself. You show her that you love her. Actions in Alcoholics Anonymous are very important. He says, I want you to start doing what you said you were going to do and saying what you, and, you know, and being where you said you were going to be. I want you to start doing that kind of stuff. He says, you go home and you tell her that you love her. And you act like you love her. And you show her things that'll make her think that you love her. And he says, after a year, maybe you guys get a divorce. It's up to you. But he says, for right now, we're going to practice because she's there. You don't know how to have a relationship, so we're going to start with the one you got, okay? And so, I ain't going to do it. I don't want to do it. I'm not interested in doing it. He says, now, wait a minute. He says, I'll tell you. If you do what I tell you to do, the way I tell you to do it, it will drive her crazy. Oh, well, I'll do it. So I went home and I did it, and he was right. It drove her crazy. One night she comes to me. She's been taking my inventory. I know it's hard to believe, but she said, you're a dirty, rotten SOB. And I haven't been working on my inventory, and I just pulled out the list and said, you missed a few things. And I can remember her just turning around and just muttering to herself, walking on through the house. And she's like, yes, yes. It's like I was winning, you know. Little by little, things started to change. And what a gift. You know, what a gift. See, I would have killed the wrong people. I'd have killed me. I had killed, you know, she is the light of my life today. You know, and those kids are doing fairly well, considered who they had to run with for a long time. But they're doing good, you know, and my life is good. And it's because of people in rooms like this. It's because of the sponsorship, and it's because of the fellowship, and it's because of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's because of the guy like me getting to a place where I'm willing to listen for the first time in my life. You know, Richard, he pointed me to that big book, and he says, look at here, in the doctor's opinion, it says we have an allergy coupled with a mental obsession. You know? and I'm allergic to apples. I understand allergies. You know, I'd eat an apple, my chest would swell shut, my nose would swell up, and I couldn't breathe. But I couldn't get the deal on it. You know, when I drink, I never had that problem. He says, oh, yeah, you do. He says, you break out in spots, you know, like Wyoming and Colorado and Texas. And he says, what happens to you when you drink alcohol? He says, it just simply tastes like more. And that's why a guy like you goes after bread on Thanksgiving Day and ends up almost to Christmas still drinking, you know. That's why, and that started to make sense to me. That's why when I promised those people that I wouldn't do it, I'd do it. You know, I had people take me to places that I had no business at all drinking. I went to a funeral one time with one of my uncles, and it was one of the worst behaviors I ever had in my entire life. I mean, I humiliated my entire family a great deal, and it went on for days. It was just crap, and I was so ashamed of that. And it's like, How do you straighten those kinds of things out? You know, how do you explain that kind of stuff? But it's like I can understand more, because I didn't want to do that. But sooner or later, it began to dawn on me that one drink just led to another drink, just led to another drink. I went to the doctor about these apples, and what do you do with this thing? And the newest person in the room can tell me what to do. Don't eat the apples. You know, just don't eat the apples. No big deal. But I don't have the same problem with this allergy with apples as I do with alcohol. I mean, I have never to this day had a miserable damn day and decided to go to the grocery store and get myself six apples. Put two in the trunk, you know. Put a couple in the glove compartment and eat one on the way home. And then when I get home, walk in the door and just say, okay, and this one's for you, baby. You know, it's just never happened. It doesn't eat. You know, I've never been in a fancy hotel or a fancy restaurant, and those people are, you know, you've always seen them. They're over there, and they're having fruit salad. And tears come to my eyes. My God, why me? You know, it just doesn't cross your mind. But I've sure done that with wine. I look over there. My God, look at those people. They're having wine. You know. But the only good thing about that is I've been around here long enough that I was taught to think past that. And what I think when I think past that is, you know, I hated wine. I like whiskey, two at a time, and keep them coming. And I think I'm going to leave that alone tonight. You know, it's just the subtle deal, you know. But I understand about this insanity, this craziness that we have. Because there's a little guy in the back of my mind, and I finally named him here a while back. His name is Al the alcoholic. And Al's back there working full time trying to explain to me about how this time is going to be different. This time because of how long it's been or what I know or whatever's going on in my life. That I can drink. And he's working out there full time because, and that's alcoholism. Because the worst thing, you know, I was sober for about 11 years and I'd been talked into running the store for my sister. And it was in bad shape whenever she was running it. And when I got hold of it, it went, just, I think it lasted, 9 months maybe. It was bad. God, she was depressed, and I was just kind of helping her out, you know, as best as I could, lose her store. And I can remember, you know, one day I called her up, and I said, Maggie, how about let me take you out to lunch? And, oh, she was so depressed. I mean, she hadn't laughed in months. I mean, it's just, and she, with good reason, too. She says, yeah, that'd be really nice if you take me out to lunch. And at that time, I just started sponsoring a guy. He'd been sober for about 5-6 years, and now he's been drinking for 5 or 6 years, and he's been sober for about maybe 5 weeks, and he was a rich guy. He had a lot of money. Always get my attention when somebody has a lot of money, you know. It could be one of my big problems. And anyway, he was he'd winter down in Central America because he's making so much money. He's a good salesman, really good salesman. And he called me up that morning right after I hung up my phone to my sister and fired me as a sponsor because obviously he explained to me about how I was overcorrecting and the truth of the matter is we didn't have to do the things that we do. And, and he was going on and on about this stuff about how, you know, you don't have to say yes or nay to every question. You don't have to do this and you don't have to do that. And I'm no longer, and I'm just a bully. You know, if you've been a sponsor for very long, you've heard that, you know, it happened here just a little while ago with the skit. I sponsored every one of those people, I think. And I can remember, thinking, my God, he's right. And I got in my car, my pickup that day, and I drove to pick up my sister. I was driving down the street and going to this restaurant to feed her. I said, you know, Maggie, I've been thinking. I don't know, but I don't think I was really that bad. The truth of the matter is, Cindy and I was going through a series of really bad breaks, and we're past that now, and things are different, and I don't really even think I drank that bad to begin with. And she started laughing. I mean, she didn't kind of laugh. She got into hysterics and started screaming at me to get her to the nearest bathroom, and I took her into the filling station, and she runs in there, you know, and she comes back out. She's still laughing. I said, what's so damn funny? And she says, Sean, you don't remember? You don't remember how it was? God, you've been telling me for years you're crazy. And he says, I can see it now. You're out of your stinking mind. Don't you really remember the last 3 years of your drinking, you never drew a sober breath in that entire time? We were so afraid you was going to do something really stupid. You know, my mom one time, she was down there by the mailboxes, and I don't know about you guys, but I was really bad about opening mail and opening my door, you know, seeing who they... I always had a little window that you could peek out and see around who... And I can remember, you know, going down to pick up my mail. My mailbox was, you know, when it's time to pick up my mail, whenever there's nothing, you know, when there's nothing left, the little deals hanging out and there's packages shoved in there, that's time to pick it up. You don't pick it up until you really have to. And I remember going down there, my mom sitting there and says, I told mom, somebody broke into my house and stole all my guns. And she, you could just see that mother look and said, you know, as your dad and me, we decided we needed to do something because we're afraid you're going to really hurt yourself or somebody else. And I can remember that look on her face. But the next look is the one I really remember. I said, well, Mom, if I'm going to kill somebody, hell, I'm going to use this gun. And you can just, I can just remember just seeing that look on her face, you know, and those people. And it's like, but I get to thinking about drinking, and I forget all about that kind of stuff, you know, because my brain leaks. Little by little, I forget what I think. And, you know, I forget. I have the disease of alcoholism. And it means that once, the only trouble is with once we kind of think we get this thing, that little guy in the back of our head just keeps working that angle, just keeps working that angle, keeps working that angle. I got a new tractor here a few days ago, and it's got that GPS system on it, you know, it's got auto steer, it's hot. It's hot. and we used, some of the guys are here that we was in this book study last Monday night. And we was talking about it. I mean, it works off, it's got a higher power. You know, it works off these satellite dishes. And beep, 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 beep. It's sitting there telling it where to go. And the way it gets on course is by being off course, you know. You know, this one, it moves over here, and this little signal comes back and says, move over. And it moves over, and then it goes over here, and it goes, move over. You know, it keeps doing that all the time. I says, you know, it's kind of like us, except we don't get it, do we? And you know, there's always a signal coming to us. You know, move over. You know, it's a quiet little deal. You just barely see it. It's not, you know, if we're not paying attention, you miss it. And I says, you know, and one of the guys says, why can't we do that? And another guy says, because your tractor has no ego. It was great. I just loved it. You know, there it is. You know, my tractor is not self-will run riot. Like I am. It doesn't have an ego that's so afraid that if I admit it, I'm wrong, it's going to kill me or something. You know, and that's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous. Little by little, coming here and doing what we're asked to do, working with other people, you know, trying to share experience, strength, and hope, trying to show other folks how it can be. You know, I live better because there are people watching me. I want to live better. And somehow that changes my whole perception of what I'm trying to do here. You know, I get such a, that, you know, this thing is so fantastic. And they told me it was going to be like this, but, you know, if you went to a group like I did, you know, those guys are not all there, you know. But those people were telling me the deal. They were telling me the deal. They were telling me what would happen to me if I was to do the journey like they had done the journey. And I would find myself in the fellowship that I had craved. And we don't know what that even looks like. A friend of mine used to say, you know, if you think you got this thing, you don't. But on the other hand, the minute you think you don't have this thing, you may be getting close. Because at the time that I think that my life is upside down, you know how we are. We don't get our way. Somehow we have offended God and God's will. You know, it's like, oh, my God, you know, God hates me again. You know, and it's really, I don't think that's the way it works. I think that it's my opportunity to see how I get to live through this situation, using the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, using a sponsor, using a home group, seeing if I can really begin to trust and rely upon a power greater than myself, see if I can receive the signal, you know, and little by little, I get tuned in. Now, don't get me wrong. My GPS system is busted most of the time, and I got to come in here and I got to have you guys tune me in, little by little. That thing changes. So if you're new here tonight and you're thinking you ain't getting it, you probably are. And if you're old here tonight and you think you got it, you might ought to pay attention to what's going on. You know, if Alcoholics Anonymous has gotten dull, boring, and glum to you, and you've been here for a while, and you've worked the steps, and there's nothing new and nothing challenging in Alcoholics Anonymous, I suggest you pick up a new person and see the light bulb come on. And it may come on in you before it comes in the new person. But I'll guarantee you what, I don't know how in the world anybody can sit down with a new person and share this experience with a new person. And when that light bulb comes on, I don't know how in the world yours can't come on. You know, it just happens. It happens. Every time I get to thinking, well, this is it. There's nothing new. Some goofball shows up and I get to learn something new. You know. When the student's ready, the teacher appears. And here I thought, you know, when I first started sponsoring people, I thought, well, I'll become a sponsor and be somebody. Now I got to go find some new guy so I can be somebody. You know, I mean, it's totally turned around. And And they just tune me in. They just keep tuning me in. So if you're new here tonight, I got to tell you, tonight I can see a lot of miracles. Look at all the miracles. And if you're new here tonight, I learned something in Alcoholics Anonymous a while back. And it goes like this. Them that go to meetings stay sober. And them that don't. Thank you.